When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Please note today's episode will briefly discuss abuse against children. Criminality, the podcast we started because we love true crime, we love reality TV, we love when the two
interact,
converge, something
overlap,
like that. Overlap, intersect.
Overlap.
Hi Melissa, how are you?
Hi Rebecca, I'm good, how are you?
Pretty good.
Yeah,
it's pretty good.
Is spring springing up there now?
Spring has so sprung. And I mean that in every sense of the word. It's beautiful. I am posting pictures of me smelling lilacs. Mm-hmm. I am insufferable because it is the season and I live in a neighborhood where there are flowers and I can't get enough of it. It's wonderful.
I love that for you. We're getting mosquitoes, so I'm trying to stay indoors, but I'm happy for you and your journey.
Yeah, you know, seasons are rough, but they pay off in the spring. They really, the long winter, can't have a spring without the winter and all that poetic stuff.
I believe you, yes.
Well, speaking of poetry, we've Best been listening segue. To a really eloquent, verbose, I would say literary podcast, you and I, that we've gotten a little obsessed with, so much so that you had the amazing suggestion of, you know, chatting about it at the top of the show, maybe even as a recurring segment. TBD.
I just don't see how it will be BD because I feel very determined in the fact that I'm going to be talking about this for a really long time. Rebecca, you're talking about...
Tell the people.
Yeah, the author, the mother, the divorcee, the poops her bed when she has some kind of iron supplement, Tori Spelling.
Infamous storage unit. Not owner.
Have her. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We, I'm calling it Under Tori's Spell. We are under Tori's Spell.
I love
it. I mean, guys, Melissa alerts me when episodes drop and I listen.
As if you're not subscribed.
Well, I don't get the alert for some reason or the notification. I must have not had that on my phone. And it was the first thing I did today. I mean, obviously coffee first, but I showered, I got out, put an AirBud in while I did my makeup and dried my hair because let me tell you, I had a long, lengthy to-do list today and yet I prioritized that to numero uno.
Honestly, it's all about 2024 is all about mental health, taking care of yourself, and what better way to do it than Under Tori's Spell?
You're going to feel so good about your life if you listen.
We have been graced with 4 episodes. Mm-hmm. Is there a rhyme or reason when they're posted? No. The first week was Monday. Last week, there were 2 days for no reason. Yep. And this week, it was Tuesday. So there's
just a random Tuesday morning.
You never know when Tori will bless you with a new episode. But Rebecca, we thought we could maybe mention a few things we've learned from Tori this week because this is an education.
Let's not forget to mention the title
of the podcast. By all means.
Misspelling, right?
Yeah. No, you got it. There's just not a reaction I can give.
Yeah, misspelling, as in Ms. Spelling and a misspelling. And I would say it's more the latter. It's more of a misspelling. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
And it's music to my ears. So let's each pick 3 things we learned this week or last week or combined among the 4 episodes we've had the privilege of listening to. You first.
Okay. Well, I've confessed to Rebecca, I've listened to each episode at least 2 times because I just like feel like I'm not, I need to grasp really get it all.
Well, and can I just say how helpful that was when I said, wait a minute. what did I forget? I overlooked something and I said, well, who is she? I didn't. And you said, oh no, she chimes in and says an amount of something.
It was $900 and something.
Right. Mm-hmm. You knew because you had twice listened.
Second time.
And for that, I'm grateful. It's basically like a fact check for me.
It really is. So my first one, that first thing I learned this week is Tori Spelling doesn't sweat. She only gets BO under her left armpit when she's pregnant. That's how she claims to know she's pregnant, because the left one gets a little gnarly.
I'm so glad you mentioned that it changes during pregnancy, because that was a big key differentiator.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And yeah, that was a good one. Well, I learned that Tori, okay, and this we might have even touched on last time, but it's a through line among the episodes. She is obsessed with feces and bathroom talk.
To a degree, I don't think either of us were prepared for.
No. If she can talk about pee, poop, or mostly that.
Yeah, those two.
And like in specific detail, she will.
And her producer and friend don't stop her.
No, no, no. They allow it. They allow it, and they bring up stories about it. It's like part of their roster of material, and it's troubling.
Yeah, but I'm still listening. Another thing I learn from her every week is that it's not the 12,000 square foot house that she's mentioning. Most of the time it's a 54,000 square foot house that she
56.
Grew up in. 56. Thank you for fact checking me there. But you will hear her say, when I was growing up, not the 12,000 square foot house, the 56,000 square foot house. And that's an important detail to me.
It's relatable. It's helpful in that sense, because we really find a way to connect with Tori. I learned that Tori Spelling had the swine flu.
Ooh.
She was one of the first people to get it. And that is so very Tori, because she loves to be different. She even has said that. She loves to be unique. Mm-hmm. And what's more unique than being among the first, like, patient 0, 1, 2, or 3 of swine flu? I mean, that's, you know,
we don't know that she wasn't patient 0, to be quite honest.
Exactly. Prove it.
Actually, she would have told us. She would have told us if she was.
Right.
The last thing I really learned from Tori Spelling is that the Mounjaro weight loss shot is known to be more fancy than Ozempic. And the way I learned this is because her doctor very believably said, "Where do you live?" And she said, "Whatever area."
Woodland Hills.
Thank you very much. Woodland Hills. And he said, "Oh, Woodland Hills, Mounjaro is like the Beverly Hills." As if you couldn't use Beverly Hills no matter. You could say Beverly Hills in Orlando. I would have gotten it.
I know.
So anyway, Mounjaro, Beverly Hills. Ozempic, Woodland Hills.
That's right. Well, I learned that when she was recently in the hospital for a broken, like a cut face, or I forget where she split.
It was the chin.
Chin. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. See, team, we're really going to get through this together. Split her chin open and realized after the fact that she should have asked him to pull a little tighter and gotten a little lift, because she's not had any work done on her face, guys.
Not
that would have been a great idea now that she's 50 plus to maybe have one little facial tweak.
Yes, I'm so glad we learned about that and learned about the ambulance driver referring to her as a star. I know that wasn't on our list, but I needed to bring that up, that she claimed that.
I believe the direct quote was, "Wait a minute. You're that star." Dot, dot, dot. She gets it all the time.
All the time. Yeah. And then also said to her daughter, "You're from the famous family." Like, come on,
you're
dude. Even
Hollywood
I would do
family.
That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Asked the 12 or 13 year old daughter, "Do you have any intel
on P.
about
Diddy?
P. Diddy?" What? I'm sorry, but if she's lying, like, her daughter's going to hear that, and I hope they get into a fight about it. I'm sorry. She is a liar who lies.
And that's why we love her. And this has been Under Tori's Spell. Come back next week when there could be 1, 2, 8 episodes that we give facts on.
She could be in season 2 by then. We have no idea. It could be over. We don't know. Well, that was super fun. And honestly, I could do it all night. But I think we should get into today's episode.
Sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Do you know the clues? I think it was cult.
I'm sure it was cult.
Oh, plural. No, multiples.
Multiples. Which
multiples,
I don't. Multiples,
TLC.
I realize now that wasn't probably a great one.
And cult. Well, I decided this pretty much during our last episode.
Yes.
And so I didn't put a lot of time into the clues, but I put a lot of time and heart into the episode. So
I'm so excited.
I think it was cults TLC, and multiples.
Yep.
So you got it. Here we are. Melissa, are you ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay. Well, to start, I would just like to say I'm just a girl recording with her co-host, asking her to stop recommending polygamy shows on TLC to me. Because this is getting out of hand. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I have Melissa to thank and blame for ever watching Sister Wives, which is not what we're talking about today. But it got me on this road to what we are going to talk about. And here I am, Melissa, watching a show at your suggestion. Mm-hmm. But this time, you really knew that there was something I might specifically appreciate. Because this show, it's no Sister Wives.
It's no Sister Wives.
But there is something you knew that I didn't, and that was that there is a cult connection. Mm-hmm. And that was enough for me to give it a whirl. So you went through your douchebag era. I'm perpetually in my cult era, because this is the fourth story on criminality I've done that covers a cult. And I'm back in the TLC waters, which is really, I consider, Melissa's territory. So please chime in as needed. Listeners, you all are probably bigger experts on this show, the network, than I. And keep in mind that we are now talking about Seeking Sister Wife, and that I've only watched the current season. I am up to date on season 5, so I don't know anything about previous seasons. So I'm limited in my scope of the full range of who these people are. But lucky for me, there are new people on the show, because I'm a new watcher, and there are new couples on the show, and we're going to talk about one of them. Also, I might need to go back and get the full Roberta storyline for Garrick and Danielle, because they talk about her a lot, even now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like I need to fill in some gaps on my understanding of just how intense this romance was.
Big sister. Wait, what did they call large wife? There was large wife and tiny wife.
What?
That's like a thing that they called each other. He called her
Roberta and Danielle.
Yeah. Roberta was a small wife, tiny wife. I'll need to do a quick Google, but yeah, but it was large
wife. And Danielle was okay with being large wife?
Is Danielle okay with anything? TBD. We don't know.
Is Danielle okay?
Yeah.
There you go. Period. Full stop. Okay. This show is weird. Sister Wives, for better or for worse, felt genuine and authentic, and I think that's kind of what has kept it going all these years.
Right.
This show feels like the polygamy version of later seasons of dating shows, where you kind of feel like the motives are different. It's lost some of its purity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of these people just want to be on reality TV, and like, sure, why not add a person to the bedroom of their marriage? So whereas Sister Wives was centered around this family's deep commitment to their Mormon faith, Seeking Sister Wife is a bit more diverse in the families that it follows. For some, it's religious. Others, it seems more like a lifestyle choice and veers towards the polyamory side of relationships. Here's the actual TLC blurb for anyone not familiar with this riveting premise of a show. Seeking Sister Wife is an American reality television show on TLC that follows polygamous families predominantly centered around the topic of looking for another wife to add to the family or an already added new wife adjusting to the family. So all the couples or families are in a state of adding and looking for their first, second wife, like the first sister wife, or perhaps multiple.
Right.
There are a few wives in and they want another. So before we go, I do want to hear just a little, like, your take on the show, because you really love Sister Wives and know it well.
Right.
What do you think of this show?
I mean, this show is fully for entertainment for me. Like, I'm very committed to the Brown family. This, I could, you know, people leave every other season and that's fine. You forget about them. I will say the first few seasons of this show felt more authentic. They had more, a lot of them were for religious purposes. So it was very kind of straightforward polygamy, I would say, more what we're used to with the Browns. Now it does feel very like doing this for influencing and stuff like that. You know, whatever. But the Merrifields on the season that you were just mentioning, Roberta and stuff, they're gold. They've been on for a few years. Earlier seasons, the Snowdens, which one of our lovely listeners wrote and asked if we were going to cover them this week.
And
I was like, please listen this week because it's not the Snowdens, but you get the idea. So I don't know. There's been a few couples I've actually liked and thought like, okay, this could work for them. And then most of them are just hot messes. So does that answer your question?
It does. It really helps. Is there a couple on season 5 that you're like, okay,
No.
This is, mm-mm. Yeah, me either. I can't get behind any of them. There's a disconnect in all of them for me.
Yeah.
And I wish we could talk about all of them, but there's simply no time. So as I mentioned, I'm a new viewer and there's new couples. One of them is a couple named Justin and Becky Ryan. They're a new couple that are introduced this season, season 5, and they are fast becoming known as, quote, the creepiest couple on TLC. That's according to Screen Rant.
100%. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we're really going to get into that. Who are Justin and Becky Ryan and why are they so creepy? Justin and Becky look like the most average, normal, basic, vanilla people if you were just to look at them and judge their appearance, right? But there's a little more to these two than meets the eye. We learn that they've been married for 26 years. She was 16 and still in high school when they got married and he was 19. They had known each other since they were children. They went to the same school. They attended the same church where her dad was a pastor. You know what? Let's hear it in their words about their story.
I'm Justin. This
I'm Becky.
My wife. Oh.
Oh.
Who first? Me first or what?
You first.
I'm Justin. This is my wife, Becky, and we're the Ryans. Well, you're kind of forced to back me up. We grew up together. She was a few years younger than me.
I was always attracted to Justin. I get that little butterfly in your heart, chest thing, whatever going on.
She was like trying to ask me out when we were like early teens. And I was like, thank you very much. She just kept coming and coming. Like, we need to get married. We got married when I was 19 and she was 16.
Being in high school and being married was actually kind of normal where I was. We weren't the first teens to get married young. Our church believed in polygamy as an option. My dad was the pastor of the church and he studied the Bible a lot. He got other wives as he was finding all the scriptures that proved that it is okay to do.
Okay, so there's lots to unpack there. But let's talk about what Becky mentioned about where they lived, getting married in high school, and her dad being a pastor of their church. The story is pretty broad, kind of vague. And that is for good reason. It isn't that she's lying. Becky Ryan is telling the truth when she says they got married in high school and it wasn't unusual where they grew up.
Right.
That's true. She was also truthful when she said her dad was the pastor of the church. What she failed to mention were some additional details that have now been widely reported, including the school that they attended was on a compound. Not only did the girls in high school get married, but girls as young as 8 got married. And they were marrying her dad. Or her stepdad, more specifically. He is the one they were marrying, and he was less local pastor and more convicted cult leader, Tony Alamo. So I'm going to tell you about that cult and what makes Becky and Justin so dang creepy on a show chock full of creeps, frankly.
Yep.
But first, let's take a quick break for this week's sponsor.
Hey, all you true crime fans, this is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morph.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases from murders to missing persons. Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime. There are 200 episodes of Criminology available to binge on right now. And new episodes come out every Saturday night.
Subscribe to Criminology today, wherever you listen to your podcast.
I'm Dr. Megan Sachs.
And I'm Dr. Amy Sloshberg.
And we're the host of the podcast Campus Killings. Our show covers some of the most sinister crimes to take place on or around school campuses, or the cases we discuss have a school-connected theme.
And with the new school year comes an all-new second season of Campus Killings, which will debut on September 16th, 2023.
But if you want to listen to Campus Killings now, you can binge all the episodes from season 1, available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
So season 5 of Seeking Sister Wife premiered on March 4th of this year, and it did not take the internet long to figure out that Becky Ryan is very likely to be the stepdaughter of notorious cult leader, convicted felon, Tony Alamo. Now, his name is spelled A-L-A-M-O, and I assumed it was Alamo, like, mm-hmm. Remember the Alamo? But it is not. I've gotten it from many sources. It's pronounced Alamo. But it doesn't really matter, and who cares, because like any good cult leader, his name is totally made up. Tony Alamo was born Bernie Lazar Hoffman to a Jewish family in Joplin, Missouri. I know.
Already, he totally shocked.
Yeah. And just to interject here, we are going to get on back to Becky and Justin, mm-hmm. but we got to take this rather crazy detour. So Tony, or Bernie, however you want to refer to him, had his sights on fame. So Joplin, Missouri, not a lot was going on. So he headed west to Hollywood in the 1960s, where he pursued becoming a singer and band manager. And he went by various stage names, including Mark Hoffman, Marcus Abad, also Little Mark.
Okay. I have a cousin named Little Mark.
It's cute. Because
his dad is Big Mark. Yeah.
That's adorable. This isn't. So he didn't become famous for music, but he did record a song.
Yes.
And we can play a little clip right here. Just listen until you can't tolerate it anymore. It's pretty creepy.
I'm just a British boy falling in love with you. I don't know why. I haven't known you for very long. If you should say we're only friends, I'll die. Little Yankee girl.
Okay. He's a creep.
Heard
it's
enough?
A creep. Yeah. My computer didn't even want to play it. That's how creepy it was.
Yeah, you're better off. Maybe your computer would implode. some of the lyrics were, if you should say, I can't kiss you, I'll die. If you should say, we're only friends, I'll die. And it's called Little Yankee Girl. And apparently he's pretending he's a guy from across the pond, like from England in the song, but he is just from the Midwest. So I don't know. The whole song is is a ruse. He did get the song published. It's not amazing. It's not the worst song I've ever heard. Definitely has a creepy edge to it. But I just have to take a second to discuss this long-held theory I've had, which is that many cult leaders, not all, but many sought fame in the arts or even business prior to starting a cult. And their desire to be famous and adored is just this like consistent through line through a lot of cult leaders. Charles Manson, to me, is the perfect example.
Yeah.
He co-wrote and sang a song with the Beach Boys, which didn't suck, which is like the most... kind of unsettling part,
yeah.
part is that I love his version of one of their songs more than the Beach Boys version. I said it. I said what I said.
Let's have Kelly Clarkson sing it. And then she like elevates everything. So Kelly Clarkson sing it.
I love that.
And then we'll forget about him.
And then we could have just a new version to hold on to. Kelly, if you're listening.
Can you imagine?
So I wonder sometimes just that if cult members found success as politicians or movie stars or singers, if it would have kept them from creating spiritual movements where they had to control people. I think about it all the time, and I think about it in this case as well. Anyway, not enough time to get into that, but it is something I think about disproportionately.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony claims he had a supernatural spiritual conversion from Judaism to Christianity, which makes him this incredible pathway to God. While in Hollywood, he began evangelizing to wayward youth in the 1960s. There were lots of them at that time. Just kind of kids roaming around on drugs without a lot of purpose. That was like his target audience. So he says he was one of the key early adopters of the Jesus movement. And he gets married. We don't know much about his first wife. But then along comes a girl from Arkansas who also left her little life for Hollywood to pursue Jesus and her dreams. Her name was Edith Opal Horn. And when she arrived in California, she was twice married with one daughter. And she was trying to give it a go to become an actress. She meets our boy Bernie, the two become inseparable and just a dynamic team. They shared a very strong connection, which is that they both were born Jewish and converted to Christianity, which I would imagine is pretty rare in the 1960s and given like their small towns, just to find each other in Hollywood. So that was a strong bond. So they immediately officially divorced their previous spouses and then they got married in Las Vegas and became who they believed they were destined to be. Bernie Hoffman and Edith Horn legally changed their names to Tony and Susan Alamo, because why not?
Why not?
And in 1969, they founded their church, the Alamo Christian Foundation. Now, they would become the names and faces behind one of the most abusive cults in recent American history that has somehow been kept from me all these years. I don't know how.
This is truly the most alarming part of the story so far for me, is that you didn't know about it.
I didn't know, and I'm very curious, listeners, who knew and who has heard of them. I feel like the Alamo name is familiar, but I truly didn't know the story, and I can only think that maybe this was overshadowed by the Warren Jeffs FLDS story, because that was so big and such huge news that maybe this just didn't make it. I don't know.
Right.
So the church was essentially Christian with like a Pentecostal style, and it was very, scare tactics. Do this or you're going to hell. It was also extremely anti-Catholic, so much so that many, many years later, one of the charges he faced was as a hate crime towards Catholics.
Oh, wow.
They just hated Catholics for some reason. And so many of their practices and what they enforced are also values of the Catholic Church, kind of the more straightforward, traditional Orthodox practices. So it was very bizarre what that was all about. They only would read from the King James Version of the Bible. They adhered to a very strict moral code. And they also had to, they had their members take vows of poverty when they joined the church. Any money they made anywhere had to be turned over to the church. And in return, their own needs would be met. So food provided for, children would receive care, etc. And that's really how they roped people in. It was, they didn't have to think about things and how to survive. They just...
That's enticing to me, I have to be honest. If I give you my money and you just take care of everything for me, I can see how you can get into that.
I'm not even saying that judgmentally. Like, these were people who just didn't know yet what they were doing. So these were people who were like, I'm not only going to give you like the secret to eternal life in heaven, but also like, I'll make sure you have clothes and like dinner on the table. It's like, okay. So things were going okay in California. The church had grown to several hundred people, but local officials were starting to poke around in the church because they didn't understand what was going on. And this is when Tony and Susan were like, you know, California is pretty expensive. Maybe we should get out of here because we need something that is crucial for any cult looking to gain traction in the 1970s. Melissa, what do you think they were looking for?
For any cult looking to gain traction? Hippies? I don't know.
Land. They needed land so that they could build a compound. They had hippies.
You said so nicely, and I was
please. No, you are me. I get it. They had the hippies. They just needed land.
Got it.
So they go down to Arkansas. They're building their compound. And in addition to their church and their several hundred members, which are growing by the day, they also build a school for the children. So now any children brought along into the cult or born into the cult have a school from preschool to grade 12. Taught by other members of the church. Were they certified teachers? We don't know. Didn't matter. They were learning the religion, right? Mm-hmm. And that Father Tony, Papa Tony, he was also called, was the kind of overseer of all things. They also had an on-site printing facility to produce their marketing materials, aka propaganda, which included little brochures that they handed out about their vow of poverty and about scaring people about going to hell.
I just don't see how you get people in with a vow of poverty. I get how you like join it and then later they say, by the way, but you couldn't tell me you want to be poor, come join us.
I know. It really is the opposite of a get rich quick scheme. It's a get poor quick scheme. But again, maybe those meals were just really amazing. I don't know. Or the services. Also on the property was a tabernacle, that's where they worshipped, and a drug treatment facility, which is another method they used to get vulnerable people roped into their cult. So are you hooked on drugs and you don't want to be?
Right.
We'll take care of you. And then they're kind of beholden to them.
And that seems very, what's the cult thing I was telling you I was watching this weekend?
Oh, the Synanon.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That feels very in that same related vein a little bit, right?
Yeah. It's a very effective, horrible, manipulative tool, right? You're taking someone at their worst, drug addicted, and they're desperate, like most vulnerable and desperate, and saying you have, you know, that you'll help them. Mm-hmm. And then they're basically roped into the cult. So in addition to this thriving property, Tony Alamo started buying businesses in the area, this little town in Arkansas. This provided them with more money. He had local power, and he also had access to new recruits. So at the peak of their success, he owned gas stations, a hog farm, a grocery store, a restaurant, all of which funded the ministry, and none of which he paid taxes on. This will catch up to him later.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it sounds like they're really embracing Southern life, right? A hog farm, like very rural.
That feels very, that feels very, what is it, banjo? What am I trying to say?
Green Acres?
No. I love Green Acres, though.
I have no idea what you're saying. But I want to know.
Yeah. What is the, like, old movie that's, like, scary and there's, it's Southern country and they play the banjo?
What you're singing sounds to me like the musical Into the Woods, and I know it's not that.
It's... Deliverance is what I was trying
Deliverance.
To
say. Deliverance. Yes. Good call. Yes. We got there.
Wow.
That is good. Well, it was a little deliverance, but they, and it was very country, but Tony and Susan kept some of their Hollywood swagger with them because in the late 70s through the 80s, they became known for, you're not going to believe this, bedazzled denim jackets. This is when the story got its hooks in me and I said, I'm in. I will never stop reading about this cult. These jackets were worn by the likes of Mr. T, Sonny Bono, Burt Reynolds, and Dolly Parton. Have you ever seen the cover of Michael Jackson's album Bad?
Yeah.
It's a Tony Alamo original. It's custom with leather. Hand to God, it's true. I know.
Oh.
The cult members made the jackets in this makeshift facility, and it apparently was toxic and smelled like bleach because they processed old denim and then they treated it and made it acid washed. Melissa, when I tell acid you these jackets were cool, they were, oh my gosh, they're Rebecca, so amazing.
Scale of 1 to 10, if you were offered one of these jackets, would you in turn go to a service? And then from there, if they fed you a good meal, how close would you be to signing over your checks?
They would have me at the jacket.
The jacket? You didn't even need food.
No, but these jackets were not for the cult members. They were made by the cult members and they were sold in fancy stores and for celebrities. They were $600 a pop back in the then? 70s. Yes.
Oh my
And gosh. I am embarrassed to say,
you Googled it.
You can still get one. Mm-hmm. There's auctions. And I'm struggling. I'm having a crisis of conscience. I mean, I didn't get one, but I'm perusing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only because I haven't decided which style. No, more on that later. Honestly, more on that later.
Okay.
So these cult members made the jackets, received zero compensation for them, but they believed that they're working for the church because all this money comes back. This is the worst part, though. The factory was incredibly toxic. They worked 14 hours a day, and that included the little tiny crystal beads. They were Swarovski, and they were all handmade, every single jacket. But the little Swarovski parts were done by children because their hands and fingers were smaller, mm-hmm. and it was easier for them to bedazzle. So that was happening.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's horrible. You still want one? You still want one?
No. I'll tell you, the only way that I would ever get one, but I won't tell you till the end.
Okay. You've clearly put some thought into this. I will wait.
I'm not going to say I lost sleep, but I will say I went to bed thinking about it. Okay. So if you were Tony Alamo, things inside the cult were great. He pretty much had full control over the members from what they ate, who they married, and what they wore, which was not the denim jackets. Ugh. If you weren't Tony or Susan, though, things on the compound were horrible. There was rampant abuse, both physical and sexual, and obviously the control tactics were there. Nobody could do anything without Tony's approval. But what really was a turning point for the cult was 1982, Susan got breast cancer. She passes away, and this is when things, and former cult members and people who fled or have since left say, this is just when things went from bad to worse. This is a lot, so I'm going to give a very condensed version. Okay. But essentially, Tony had already declared polygamy as a completely fine practice, but hadn't done it himself, but other cult members were. Mm. And they were having lots of children that way. I think it was one of the main ways to supply more children, which is probably part of it. But now that Susan was passed, he was on a mission to find multiple wives. And he said there was no limit to the number he could have because he was Father and Papa Tony. Yeah, the rules never apply to cult leaders, right? Mm-hmm. We know that. And he did have a preference for younger women. But first, there was the matter of Susan's body. When she died, he told everyone she's going to rise from the dead. Does this remind you of a more current?
Yeah.
Remember what?
Elizabeth Vargas?
The Colorado?
Elizabeth Vargas? Lori Vallow.
Yes. But also, this is scary that there's so many versions. The woman that they kept alive, that they kept in the room.
Oh, Mother
just
God.
Happened. Mother God. It was that kind of situation. He said she was going to be resurrected, so they embalmed her and kept her on display for 6 months.
Oh,
6 months. Finally, I guess they realized she dead. So they buried her in a heart-shaped marble mausoleum. I don't know what you picture as a mausoleum. I thought they were kind of like casket sized, like those, you know, they go in the walls. I saw a picture. This thing was massive. It was this huge heart, marble heart on their property. So she's now buried, but only for 10 years because I mean, why would they let her lay in peace? When the feds were ready to seize all of Tony's property, they arrived, the feds, the agents, that is, to find the marble mausoleum heart smashed to pieces and her body gone. Now, Tony himself likely, well, no, he definitely didn't do this because he was serving a jail sentence in Florida at the time for beating a child. It's likely that his followers did. Yeah, this guy was horrible. So when Susan's biological daughter, Christian Cooey, found out about this, she sued Tony. I don't remember what the name was, but like for stealing a body or something like that. And he countersued for defamation of character. And this legal battle went on over Susan's body for 3 years. But eventually the court said, Christian is right. Mm-hmm. She returned the body. And we want to award her damages because what child should have to go through trying to get their mother's body returned to be in peace? And she refused the money. She said it was baby blood money. She didn't want it. All she wanted was for her mother to be laid to rest. And she had escaped the cult. So she was not.
Okay.
And she knew her mother was terrible in her own right, but she also knew she was under the power of Tony.
Sure.
And she just really felt this obligation to get her body back and, you know, properly buried. And,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I really think she sounds like an amazing person. So eventually Susan Alamo was, it's called reinterred. I guess it's like buried again, this time in Oklahoma, I guess at the request of her daughter. Okay. So back to Tony wanting some wives. And this part is really terrible and we're not going to spend a lot of time on it. But just for anyone who's listening, just to listen with care. He pursued marrying girls as young as 8 years old. And one of the crimes he would eventually go down for was driving over state lines for purposes of sex with minors. So this very much was happening and it was proven. Gosh. He had wives in their teens, but also as young as 8 and 9. Dark as dark gets.
Yeah.
And we're not going to stay there long, but this man was evil. So for his quote, older wives, one of them fled the cult and later reported that Tony continually drugged her to kind of tame her because she was sort of fighting back. He beat her, drugged her, and demanded she gets plastic surgery to look like Susan. And that was the breaking point because she was afraid he was going to drug her and like put her under for surgery unbeknownst to her. So she ran. After Susan passed, he rebranded the church from Alamo Christian Foundation to Music Square Church, known as MSC, and he was granted a 501c tax exemption status this time because he got smart and was like, oh, if we're technically a church, then I really don't have to pay taxes. However, the IRS revoked this status in 1996 when their investigation revealed he'd been evading around 10 million taxes all in all over the years.
Whoa.
And everything just went to enhance his life. Nothing went to the improvement of anyone around him.
Right.
It was truly all just funding his lifestyle. He had a huge house. He lived so lavishly and nobody else in the church did.
Wow.
He served a 4-year prison for that tax evasion and he came out with an order to pay $250,000 restitution to the remaining cult members for their unpaid labor. This went completely ignored by Tony, who eventually would go back to court because the investigators now knew there were other much more violent and serious crimes, not financial crimes. And it took many years, but he eventually went down for 10 federal counts, including the one that I mentioned, which was the most serious, kidnapping and driving over state lines with minors. So there were 10 federal counts he went down for that spanned 11 years. In 2009, he was sentenced to 175 years in prison,
okay,
which we love to hear. And he died 8 years later. He only served 8 years. He died in 2017 while in custody. So that was the real short version of Tony Alamo. But you might be thinking, well, Rebecca, that's fascinating. But how is Becky Ryan on Seeking Sister Wives exactly connected to Tony Alamo? Can you back this up for us? Yes, I can. So Becky hasn't confirmed who her father is, but it has been reported and confirmed that her mother, Sharon Krupp, was believed to be one of Tony's common-law wives. So Sharon, Becky's mom, left her ex-husband David for Tony and the church and took Becky with her.
Oof.
And I know, David, the husband, the abandoned husband, spoke out in an article, the Southwest Times Record in 1989, and he's quoted as saying, and he's referring to Tony Alamo. "There's the man who has destroyed my life and taken my wife and daughter from me. Now he has my daughter sitting on his knee and has kept me from her for 3 years without a letter or a phone call," end quote. So that's disturbing, given all we know about Tony Alamo. So we know that David and Sharon had this one daughter named Rebecca together. We know she was born in October of 1981. So people have connected the dots that Tony Alamo would be kind of a stepfather figure to her. Sharon did change her last name to Alamo from Krupf to Alamo, but testified in his trial that she was never charged with anything. They just kind of used her for information. And she said they were never legally married. And that is really what saved her from a lot of implications.
Yeah.
She says she didn't know about a lot of them because he had a lot of wives. So it is possible that she didn't, or maybe it's just plausible deniability. I don't know.
So he went from just being married to the one lady for years and years and years.
For years and years.
She dies.
He was pretty obsessed with her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She dies. He just goes and marries all these other people and commits all these sex crimes against children.
Yep. He had been abusive to children prior to that and to adults, but he had never kind of deviated into this total like sexual depravity against children. So let's now circle back to Justin and Becky, because we can't end there. That's way too dark.
Right.
So now that you understand the environment that these two came up in, it really does shed light on their behavior on the show. It does give me more empathy for them. Does it change things for you?
No.
No.
No. No.
I agree, but I do think indoctrination is real.
Yeah.
And I think there are some things that probably they think are normal, and we are going to get to them, that are so not normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely can see now the connections to the cult. So let me show, not tell you.
Okay.
But before I do that, let me tell you one more thing. Remember when I said they were getting a reputation for being a creepy couple on the show?
Uh-huh.
Let's hear why.
Do you happen to be single?
Yes.
Would you be interested in dating my husband?
Dating your husband?
Yeah, we actually are in a polygamous lifestyle. Well, seeking to be in a polygamous lifestyle.
I mean, come on. Like, I think her husband had gone to the bathroom or something and she just swooped on in. I just thought she was just saying, hey, what's up, guys? I know very little about polygamy. It's like a step up from swinger, right?
I know it's not normal. I mean, it's not like the norm, but I mean, you can ask us all the questions you want.
I came back in and she had approached the hottest girl in the bar there. And I'm like, she's crazy, but cool.
I was married and got divorced. And I have two kids.
Yeah. Okay. So when I saw this, I thought, that's somebody that doesn't have like a lot of social awareness, or the producers put them up to this, something like that. So I was fine with this original. Would I do it? No. Would I have been nice as that lady? Probably. Probably, but then I would have said
you
no.
I was like, oh, I am that girl.
yeah, I would. And then I would ghost with them like she did. But I didn't get like scary at that part of it, but I got scary later.
Okay, it definitely escalates. But here's what I think is scarier looking at that now that we know what we know.
Okay.
That was like evangelistic tactics. The girl was not interested.
True.
And she wasn't really backing down, right? She's like, well, we'd be happy to answer any questions you have. Oh, I used to have that fear too. When she says, I don't really want to share someone. Mm-hmm. She's using all those things that are like, but then I realize it's like having a sister best friend.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, what are you doing tomorrow night? And she's locking her into an answer. True. And she actually goes, well, I'm actually free tomorrow night. And suddenly this girl who, if you're watching, and I know our listeners can't see, but she did not want to go on this date with them. But she suddenly agreed to. And like you said, she completely ghosts them. And I'm glad. Yeah. But to me, I'm like, oh, these are people who don't take no for an answer. And
very true.
It adds a dark element to this that I hadn't fully appreciated before.
Got it.
Now, before anyone goes and feels too bad for Justin and Becky because things don't work out with this girl at the bar, her name being Desiree, don't worry, because they have another potential sister wife waiting in the wings, Stephanie. Now, Stephanie, it's like, I don't know, they sound like they're in the definition of a complicated relationship.
Yeah,
it sounds like she was casually dating them as their potential other sister wife for 9 months, which, you know,
is a long time.
Mm-hmm. Longish.
In this world.
In this world, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then she kind of disappears and comes back. And Justin and Becky are feeling like she's kind of playing with their emotions, and they are all in with her. They are in love with her. And she does not seem to be reciprocating on the same level. This next clip, Melissa, is the one you're talking about, which takes a real turn to scary territory.
She invited us. And then the night before we were going to leave is when she was like, oh, I think I'm going to have to work. That's what she said.
I'm good to go.
Are you sure? Okay, really? But we've decided to take this trip anyways. She doesn't know that we're coming.
We figured, hey, she set it up. She invited us, you know. We booked a room, and at the last minute, she changed her mind, and we said, hey, you know, we're going anyway. Because in other downtimes, whenever we did see each other, she seemed to melt, you know, in my arms. So we were like, once we show up, she's going to be happy to see us.
They really freak me out. I just don't get... I get confused with Becky's relationship, because the way she's talking is they're all in love with each other, but that's not really what they say on the show. Like, some of her words say that, and then other words say it's just her and Justin, but like, she so badly wants this to work for some reason. And also, why didn't they have sister wives before? She has kids. Like, if I'm going to have a sister wife, it's going to be when I'm popping out the first one, not 20 years down the road.
Well, great point. But did you hear at some point she wanted to have one when the kids were little? She says that in one of the confessionals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know how long they've been trying to seek a sister wife?
Is it that whole time?
20 years.
They're the problem.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like, I think she is the what's it? What's the expression? Like the wrench in the iron in the wrench? No.
Yeah.
No.
Monkey no. wrench? No, monkey. That's a song. She's I don't know what the New York version is. Do you know what I'm saying? Or,
yeah. I think the woman probably does like Justin. I don't know why. And she's probably, like, this girl, Becky, comes on so strong. And she's like, you could be my best sister, friend, wife. And I think they're like, no thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I think might be happening over 20 years.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But also that they can't just be self-aware enough to be like, hey, maybe this isn't for us if nobody's, like, taking it.
Also calling it last minute, but they have to drive 10 hours. There's a 12. Lot of minutes. Oh, I'm sorry. There are a lot of minutes that you can think about between your house and driving to where this poor lady is, who, by the way, we knew she was never going to be seen because she chose to be blurred in every picture. So I was like, we're never going to meet Stephanie.
No. And so it ends with them saying stuff like, well, she always says she doesn't want to see us, but we always like wear her down and like melt her heart in the end. Like, it's really alarming.
It is.
Yeah. And so, no, Stephanie is not happy when they finally roll up after this 12-hour trip.
Unreal.
I can't. There are so few places you can convince me to drive 12 hours for. Like, it's wild.
Yeah.
So let's not forget that while en route to show up to her house, they're, you know, scheming of other ways to win her over. And remember that she was having financial troubles and that prevented her from keeping her gym membership. So, you know what? We're in the neighborhood anyway. Why don't we go to her gym and reinstate her membership?
That is so creepy to me. That's crossing so many lines to like use that information. Like, they know she goes to this, I think it's like an Orange Fitness. They know she goes there.
I know.
And to then go in and say, oh, we want to pay for this for our friend. Like, I don't know.
But I really hope the company doesn't allow that as a policy. Like, I wouldn't want anyone going to my location of exercise.
Yeah. Please.
I don't know why I said it like that. Also just known as my gym.
Yeah. So, and it's fully to manipulate her. It's fully to be like, look what I did for you. I can't stand people like that.
This couple's actually, I think, in all honesty of all the couples, well, Garrick's pretty bad, but I think this couple's a little predatory. I think, I don't know. They're kind of freaking me out. They're very creepy. I think this counts as stalking. I mean, she said not to come and they came to her house. And there's little moments. I didn't even have all the clips, but he's like, well, you know, the door's going to be locked and it's raining. And she's like, there's windows on her garage. I don't care. I'll look in the windows. Like,
she wasn't kidding.
No shame. Mm-hmm. No, she wasn't. She left, but she was like, oh, well, but I will. Like, that woman is no shame.
Yeah.
So to bring it around present day, as for the Tony Alamo cult, it's inactive, though their website is still live, which is wild. Check it out. Many former members are coming out and telling their story. There was a four-part documentary on the Sundance Channel called Ministry of Evil, The Twisted Cult of Tony Alamo, which is up next on my list.
Yeah.
And this is, okay, we're going to talk about the jean jackets because I promised. In 2016, a former cult member named Ernest Kearney wrote and performed a one-man show in Hollywood at the Hollywood Fringe Festival called My Alamo War. And it was all about this four-year battle he had against the Alamo Church to pull the jean jackets from all the stores and get compensation for the members who made them and said, these cannot be sold. Like, these are, you know, on the backs of children and unpaid workers, and only this guy is profiting. And he was eventually successful. And now they're having this second birth of interest. Nicki Minaj, Miley Cyrus, all these artists are wearing the jackets. Now, this is where my, you know, the line is for me.
Sure.
If this guy is now the proprietor of the estate or owns the licensing, like if I purchased one and it went to him or some restitution for him and the cult members.
I think that makes sense.
I will absolutely do it. If they're just on eBay and, well, they are on eBay, some of them, and they're just random. But, I mean, it's crazy. You have to go on there. I mean, $1,900 and they're like original, saying the year. They're so cool. Anyway, I don't know. I'm going to try to find this guy. I'm going to try to find out, like, what the deal is, where the money goes.
Right.
I will report
that back. Makes a big difference. And yes, please do. I'm going to have to Google some of these jackets. But that's why. I don't feel like I've ever heard of a cult working that closely with, like, style. Let's just put that word out there.
Right?
Look at Justin and Becky. That was not the first word I was coming up with.
No. They could never. And frankly, I mean, these are better than any hat Robin Dixon has embellished.
Oh, like, R.I.P. these are Robin on
amazing.
Real Housewives.
I know. But anyway, that is the story of the Alamo Christian cult, Becky Ryan, and my descent into TLC's trash television. Thank you very much.
I'm so glad. Well, at some point, you're going to have to stop saying TLC isn't really my thing. It's Melissa's thing because you.
Clearly. That's what I'm saying. Here I go.
I've beckoned you into this situation.
You absolutely have. Melissa's like, there can only be one way.
And it's, I'm like, they're not that creepy. I get it.
Who knew? Did you know how bad the cult was?
I had no idea. So I only recently heard that her stepdad was like associated with it. But that makes so much more sense, especially if he obviously grew up in some form of it, some fraction, some, you know, obviously knew enough about it. That it makes
sense. Justin?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. I'm assuming that that would
be both of them. No, I think they went to the same school on the compound.
They sure glaze over that. They do not mention the words compounds, so jean jackets,
nothing. I know. I need to know everything about this cult now. I'm like, I am in so deep.
I have a question.
But yeah.
If Becky wore the denim jacket, would you want it then?
Stop.
Would it ruin it for you?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, would that like tip me over to become like their sister wife? Like, I don't love the jacket that much.
I definitely wasn't going there.
No, it wouldn't ruin it for me.
Really?
No.
Becky ruined the color red when she wore that shirt.
I guarantee you she doesn't think they're cool.
Yeah.
I guarantee you she would be like, those are like an embarrassment of like a time during the cult. Like she doesn't think was, I don't know. I don't think she has it in her to know that those are actually really cool. And I hate that. Again, Tony Alamo did have some artistic vision. And goodness, he could have been like Isaac Mizrahi or someone else in fashion. And like just have made jean jackets and called it a day.
Okay, what if
if he got some... Yeah, sorry, right. I'm like, no. Really?
Go, oh, please.
It just drives... No, I just... Why do they have to like have worshippers? Can't they just make money making jackets? What were you going to say?
I was going to say, could we get Kelly Clarkson to wear the jacket?
While she sings the song.
No, I think at some point, Kelly Clarkson's going to need to be involved in a few of our ideas.
It's funny, you pulled her out of where?
Okay, no, Kelly Clarkson is like very famous now. In general.
Wait, but she's
very famous for covering other people's songs on her, like, Kelly-oke. And so everyone's like, if you give her the song, it becomes her song. So that's how I got Beach Boys to there. And now jean jackets.
And, no, that's a really good point. And she also kind of is in the reality TV world being in a competition show. Kelly Clarkson in the denim jacket. I'll post some pictures of celebrities wearing them and of the jackets. I'd love to hear if other people think they're as cool as I do, but you know, I love an oversized jean jacket. It's like, they're so cool.
It's like those tiny little baby hands made them just for you.
Oh my God. So guys, if you're not watching Seeking Sister Wives, get on it and we can chat about it later. Mm-hmm. But I really want to know what you're watching.
Okay.
Because you've told me I might like it.
I think you'll like it. And I would be surprised actually if you weren't watching it. All right.
Okay. Yeah.
One of my clues is Arkansas. I did not see that happening, but you had an Arkansas connection. So that was kind of cool. Next, Netflix. And third, jail, which is actually a word in there.
Jail is a word in the title?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Okay. You've probably seen it on Netflix, like as one of the things. You might just not have known what it is, but it's Unlocked, a jail experiment.
I want to see that. Oh my gosh. I know exactly what that is. I didn't know it was in Arkansas. Okay. Is it good?
It's actually really good.
It looks so interesting.
It is. The premise behind it is the sheriff in some Arkansas jail is basically, you know, they always have to have like a backstory, but saying like in certain countries when prisoners are given more access to things, more freedoms, that their rate of I always have a hard time with that word, recidivism.
You got it.
Okay.
No, you had it.
Okay. Is much lower and they just do better overall. It's better for morale. It's better for their families, blah, blah, blah. So at this place, they keep calling it 23 and one. So you're in lockdown 23 hours, you're out one. So they go into this and basically say, this is the experiment. You guys can be out all the time, but the only thing is the deputies are going to be out of the room. So like, we can watch you guys, but you have to figure it out yourselves. So it's really interesting how, especially from the beginning, how they're like fighting and, you know, like don't really know how to handle the freedom. And then as they're having to learn to figure things out together because they don't want to lose these privileges, then they get more privileges. I don't know. It was just, it was very, very fascinating to me. Like they end up getting, this isn't a spoiler, but they end up getting like unlimited phone time. And so that's, so that's a great thing, right? But then you have to remember everyone's fighting for these four phones. So it's like coming up with order, but they have to do it together. I thought it was really fascinating. I'm on the last episode, but I don't know. I think there's a case to be made for it for sure. But it's just interesting as it goes along. And these people are in there. Some of them are literally waiting for trials for murder. Some of them it's so it's kind of like those people have nothing to lose, but like, can they become mentors for other people? Yeah. I'm really into it. And I hope there's more seasons.
It's so up my alley. And I do know exactly it. So my show, it was between that, what you watched, and what I picked. It's so funny, but I was like, I will definitely watch Unlocked, it's called. Mm-hmm. I have a question about it. When I started Love on the Spectrum, my fear about it, which proved to be unfounded, was that they would sort of like exploit the subjects and kind of like reduce them to one dimension. And I feel like they've just done such a good job at not doing that on Love on the Spectrum, that they show these very like complex people, because people are complex. That was my fear with Unlocked, is like, do you feel it's doing them justice? Like,
yeah, it seemed
the incarcerated people.
I thought so. And then also still being respectful of the people they've committed these crimes against, because there's like one guy who ends up going into solitaire after this whole thing. They're like, he's in here for murder. And they like kind of show what happened and they talk about, we've made these mistakes. Or it wasn't him talking about this, but saying like, this I've done in my past and this terrible thing and all that. Some of them aren't ready to accept those things. So I feel like you're seeing people as a person and not just like as what they did, or like, here's the great guy. No, you're really seeing like them and their outburst, even when they're like the person you're going for. What is Dr. Heavenly's husband named? Dr. Daddy?
Heavenly.
Dwayne? Damon?
No.
Damon?
Damon.
Damon. Dr. Damon, there is a guy who I swear could be his cousin. And he's one of my favorite ones on there. But like, they look very similar to me.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that sounds good. My fear is that they would like paint with a broad brush, but it sounds like you get to know individuals. So. Mm-hmm. Good. No, that sounds super interesting.
Yeah, you'd really like it, I think.
I'm sure I will. Okay. So also Netflix.
Okay.
Australia, Amnesia.
Who am I? not me asking you, but there was, I don't think I know what it was. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't think I do.
It's called The Tourist.
Nope. Absolutely not what I was guessing. Mm-mm.
I had never heard of it, but my friend said, oh my gosh, it's so good. And there's two seasons. And you know, when Ooh. Someone says that and they're like, so you can like plow mm-hmm. through and binge. So here's the little premise. Just when I Googled it, it says a man wakes up in the Australian outback with no recollection of who he is, and he must try to piece together his memory as merciless figures from his past pursue him. It's actually sometimes uncomfortable. Okay. The amount you don't know. Do you know what I mean? You're like,
right.
And you're also imagining being him, like
sure.
pretty within the first 10 or 15 minutes, this thing happens where he now doesn't know his name, how he mm-hmm. got into the hospital. What happened? We see one scene prior and that's all we know. And wow. so he's just like moving through trying to piece things together. And it's almost uncomfortable. And mm-hmm. it's the outback of Australia, like the country. So it's very dusty.
Ooh, okay.
And I don't know if you get feelings like when you're watching things, like I will feel mm-hmm. like dusty and dirty if I'm watching very hot, dusty places.
No, I don't.
It's visceral,
that,
but, I guess is what okay. I'm saying. Like I feel like uncomfortable, like I'm there. It's so crazy, but the acting is amazing. I don't know. Do you know that his name is familiar? It's Jamie Dornan.
Yeah, he was in. Oh no,
looks familiar.
I think I know him from like 50 Shades of Grey. Is that the
yeah?
Same
he is 50 Shades okay. of Grey. Yeah, he's.
I don't know him really, from that. I just know him. Other
you just know him in the biblical in the cult sense. He's really buff in this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the other actors are Australian. I don't know if he is actually, or if he's just doing.
I don't know.
I'm mm-hmm. not sure. They're all amazing. It's called The Tourist. I'm on episode 4, I think, of season 1, and okay. I'm in. There's like a cowboy from America's entered the picture. There's mafia.
Oh dang!
It's really, really good.
It reminds me a little of. Have you ever seen Memento? The movie Memento.
I was just gonna say it. Isn't unlike Memento in that sense. Yes. Mm-hmm. If you liked that, you will love this because you are working okay. backwards, trying to piece something together with somebody at the same time. It's so well done.
That's like top 5 movies for me. I want to see this.
Yeah. It's an amazing mm-hmm. movie. Yeah. Okay. Well then good. You will love it and I will watch Perfect. Yours and you will watch mine.
Yay.
How fun.
That almost never
happens. Now I want it. I know it's really true. We always are like fake promising. You're mm-hmm. like, yeah, I think I'm going to watch that.
I Maybe. Really promise. I don't know what you're doing.
So tell me about the story we're going to hear next from you.
Okay. Next story, 3 clues.
Okay.
Buddy Holly, teeth. I don't know if that one's nice. Motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yep, that's it. Buddy Holly, teeth, motorcycle.
Is that Weezer?
Yes, I'm seeing Weezer in a few months.
Fun!
Yeah, that's who Weezer's- I went to see in New York, like when I went to go to New York really? A few years ago. That's who I went to see. Yeah, Madison Square
That's
Garden.
That's super fun.
Yeah.
You. Is Weezer part of it?
Weezer has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Truly darn. Not a darn thing.
Okay. I thought maybe one of them was in reality TV. Okay,
no.
Well, I have no idea, but I'm very intrigued.
I'm excited. I think you'll enjoy it. Should be a fun one.
Well, good. This was a rough one, but thank you for hanging in.
Absolutely. Great job. Thanks for bringing us into the world of Becky with the bad hair and and good old Justin, who is also wearing tank tops for some reason.
Yeah, they love tank tops on this show. They also met someone in the last episode at the end. So,
that is not going to work.
Cliffhanger. Yeah, they're like, I don't know. I read that Yari is going to be like a perpetual, like we're going to see more of her on upcoming episodes. So
gosh, Yari,
stay tuned.
Girl.
Yeah. And let us know if you guys are listening to Misspelled with Tori Spelling or watching Seeking Sister Wife. And yeah, you can find us on criminalityshow.com. You can follow us on Instagram at criminalityshow. And that's about it.
That's it. Let's yeah. be honest. We're shutting it down quite a bit yeah. there.
Trimming yes. the fat.
Exactly. And make sure you listen to Tori Spelling's podcast so you can Gosh. Catch up with us. Like, we got to promote it. She needs the listeners to.
We need to make sure she doesn't shut down her operation.
Yes.
Yeah. At some point, though, I want a kickback. Okay. Well, we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.